Okay.
Deb, compulsive overeater.
All right, so I just turned off all the entry and exit charm. So go ahead and... Okay. Welcome to our, what are we on, our fifth session of our Starving for God BBA workshop. And I am so excited today. We are doing the first half of Bill's story. That's what we're going to be talking about. And we have a special guest speaker. And I hope at this point that she actually is on the line. Leilani, if you're on the line, will you go ahead and unmute yourself and just say hello? And we'll just, I'm not sure if she is or not.
Hi, hello.
Hi, yay, you're there.
Hi. Yeah.
So excited. And I was a little nervous. I was like, all of a sudden sweating. So I do, before we dive into our prayer and meditation and really open up into this dialogue and this conversation about the Bill story, I do just want to talk about a couple of housekeeping things. So at this point, hopefully you have had a chance to connect with your step partner a couple of times. If for some reason something is not working out in that space, maybe your time, you can't get your time to coordinate, or you're just not jiving, just contact me. This is designed to be an experience where you hook up with a buddy who you didn't know before, who might be on the other side of the country or the other side of the world, and yet you find the commonality in you and you connect in a really beautiful way. And if for whatever reason that's not happening in that particular group, there's no problem, no harm, no foul. Everybody's amazing, and it might just be, you know, a different schedule that needs to happen or something like that. Just email me so that you can connect with someone and get through, go through this work with a partner who you connect with. That's the main thing that I really want to say about that. Any other technical queries that you have about calling in from the computer, about links, about accessing the Google contact list and things like that, please email me about that too. And continue to send your emails about just the struggles that you're having come up, the beautiful awakenings and ahas are coming up. I mean, I love connecting with you throughout the week, and so don't think that I'm too busy and I don't want to hear from you. I really, really love it, and I have wonderful conversations with the people who do reach out. So I'm inviting you to reach out. I want to today just talk about next week's homework, because last week I talked about it in the very, very beginning, I mean at the very, very end. So I'll speak about next week's homework, and then we'll introduce ourselves, and then we'll go into some prayer and meditation. So this week, assignment 3, the first part of Bill's story. Next week, assignment 4 is the second part of Bill's story. So what you hopefully have already done today is you've gone through pages 1 through 8, you've underlined everything that you related to, you've transcribed, you've answered the corresponding questions in your idiot's guide, and you've, as my suggestion was last week, you've actually taken that extra step to write some notes in the margin of how that story actually pertains to you, like how you relate to that and how this is actually telling your story. Next week, we're also transcribing. We're also doing idiot's guide questions. We are also underlining, but this time we want to underline what we are not willing to do. And nothing that I am saying right now is anything that is not either in your sponsorship guide or in your Big Book Awakening. So you don't need to memorize anything that I'm saying. I'm simply just going over it. So next week, assignment 4, give yourself time to transcribe and really have an experience with the work. Okay. With all that out of the way, I do want to find out who is on the call today. So I'm going to introduce myself, and then maybe we can just popcorn style it, just announce yourself and where you're from. So I am Debbie, compulsive overeater and addict, and restrictor from San Diego.
Hey, Dia.
Hi. Hi, I'm Lynn, compulsive overeater, drug addict from Sherman Oaks, California.
Hello. I'm Lauren, compulsive overeater from Encino, California.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Shannon.
Hi, Shannon.
Sorry, hi, Shannon. I got some really bad feedback from something going on. I think it's
this is Cheryl from New Zealand, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And I don't know. Can you hear me? Can someone let me know?
Yeah, we can hear you. We can hear
Thanks.
You. Hello.
Hi, dude.
Hi, this is Beth Ross, compulsive eater addict from Tahunga, California.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Christiana from New Zealand, anorexic, bulimic, and compulsive overeater.
Yay, Christina, I'm so glad that you got on the call.
Hi, I'm Jack from Oakland, compulsive overeater.
Hello, hey Jack.
Hi, I'm Lorraine from Canada. Compulsive overeater.
Yay, Lorraine, I'm glad that you figured that out too. It's so exciting.
Yes.
Yay.
This is Tammy.
Atlanta.
I'm a food addict and an alcoholic, and I'm from San Diego.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Lisa.
I'm Jan, compulsive eater, Al-Anon from Burbank.
Hello.
Hi, this is Tammy from Visalia, bulimic, anorexic, compulsive overeater, body obsessor, addict, alcoholic from Visalia.
Welcome.
Hi, it's Kadia from Los Angeles.
Kadia.
Grateful from compulsive overeater.
Thank you for being here.
Recovered.
Hi, this is Deb, San Diego, compulsive overeater, addict.
Hello, Deb.
Hey, I'm Lisa. I'm from Atlanta. I'm an alcoholic, anorexic, bulimic, compulsive overeater.
Lisa, good to hear you. You're here.
This is Sue from Western Massachusetts. I'm a compulsive overeater.
So. That it?
I'm Jack from Oakland. I don't know if you heard me earlier. I'm an alcoholic addict and a compulsive overeater.
We gotcha. Thank you. So glad that you're here, Jack. Okay. Welcome, everybody. So good. I'm so glad that you're here. Let's go straight into the set-aside prayer. So remember, we're still in the physical craving, the physical part, what happens to me after I start, after I put that first bite in me or that first behavior in my system. So if you'd like to say that prayer with me, God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me see the truth about my physical craving after I start to eat or act out around food. And we'll go into 5 minutes of meditation.
Okay. So I feel guided to just create a link between what we spoke about last week as we move into Bill's story, just to re-presence where we are in the work, where we're in the first step. We are looking at this three-part separation from health, this dis-ease. We're looking at our physical, our mental, and our spiritual. That's what we're going to be doing over the next few weeks. We've already started. And what we're focusing on right now is just the physical. So from the doctor's opinion all the way through page 23, we just are looking at what happens after I already take that compulsive bite into my system, or that behavior, that skipping a meal, right, that restriction, whatever that thing is for you, after I already start to act out, what happens? And when we look at the doctor's opinion, the doctor helps us to see that he defines for us this physical aspect, and he calls it an allergy. And the way that my allergy manifests in this way is that it manifests as a craving that's beyond my mental control. And so I have to ask myself that question. Once I start, do I lose control? Can I look back at my history and can I see that I've lost control? And maybe I was able to stop for, you know, that evening over there, and maybe this one time over here, and maybe I didn't have the full box and I didn't have, you know, the whole pint and whatever, and I'm trying to create the story, the delusion that I actually don't have a problem that's that bad. I'm not like those people. I can still do this. I can still control it. I can still follow this diet. I still have a couple other, I can call that trainer, that nutritionist. You know, that sponsor can fix me. And I'm looking at all the ways that I can try to get create a layer between me and the truth so that I don't see what's really in front of me. And what's really in front of me is that this is something that is beyond my mental control. It's not a matter of willpower. That my body, you know, the analogy I heard recently was like, let's say I have an allergy to grass. I sit on grass, and I start to itch. I'm not wanting to itch. I'm not thinking about itching. It's not going on in my mind. My body has a physical reaction, and that's what they're trying to say here in this part of the work. And so I have to see that, and I have to see that I need a message of depth and weight if I'm going to be pulled out of this hopeless situation, this allergy. And that I'm told in the doctor's opinion that human aid, i.e. a doctor's help, is actually not going to work. That I'm going to have a spiritual experience. I don't even know what that is right now. And I don't even know if I believe in God. And I don't know, or maybe I think that I believe in God, and I don't get why this fucking thing called God hasn't helped me already, because I pray to it all the time, like Santa Claus. And I'm frustrated, and my problems are piling up on me, and I feel like a victim, and then I act out more. And so do I see this happening in my history? And so we get to a place in the doctor's opinion of, wow, they might be talking about me. And we continue that inquiry as we go into Bill's story. And so at this point, I would love for Leilani just to kind of take the baton pass and pick up from here and share with us, Leilani, your experience with how you relate to Bill.
Thank you so much, Debbie. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Leilani. I'm a recovered food addict, binger, purger, restrictor, cleanser, faster, crash dieter. And it's such a pleasure to be on the line with everyone. Welcome to everyone who announced themselves and those who didn't announce themselves. And yeah, what Debbie was talking about, I'm going to talk about Bill's story. And it's so, I think it's imperative for the food addict, for the restrictor, for the overeater, for the binger, to really focus on, to make this their own story. So how can this alcoholic, this stockbroker alcoholic from the 1930s, how can I see myself in this story? So I want everyone to take a look at that first page. Hopefully you have your book open, page one. And I want this to be like, this is Leilani's story. This is, you know, you want to be, spiritual life is led with a question, right? So I always thought I had all the answers. I always thought I knew everything. And now on this side of life, I'm constantly seeking, and I'm asking myself a question, and that's part of the process that we do with Big Book Awakening, is that we're turning statements into questions in order to generate a personal experience with depth and with weight for me to ask myself, hey, is this me? Right? We're in the process of diagnosis. We're in the very beginning. We're just looking at the body. Is this me? And is this my situation that's being outlined? You know, and we are in the very, very beginning. And just as you're in awareness about your physical allergy, your phenomenon of craving, your body, you want to be watching. And in the first step, you know, it's really normal to have some resistance, to have some real heaviness, and to have some acting out. I've experienced that. I've been through the steps. I've been through the steps in the Big Book Awakening way 8 times, and it doesn't matter. I mean, I'm serious. No matter how many hours I spend in, you know, working with others in prayer and meditation, when I'm back in my first step, I'm in my first step, and I'm having this total upheaval of self, and everything that's being brought up, I want you to just clock it, engage it, and know that it's normal. If you're acting out in your restricting behavior and your overeating behavior, I want you to know, I mean, that's what we're examining, right? The question of control, the question of choice, and the question of power. And, of course, the first step is admitted we were powerless over food, over our bodies, that our lives had become unmanageable. So if that's going on for you, watch it. No judgment, no good, no bad. Just this is happening for me. You know, and for that truth to be revealed, it's almost imperative that some of those behaviors do exist, and Bill's going to reveal that to us. So this is Leilani's story, and you want to ask yourself, is this Jack's story? Is this Lisa's story? Is this Deb's story? Is this Tammy's story? Is this Shannon's story? Is this talking to me? Am I being described here? And, you know, Bill, as he dives in, you know, I hope everyone was able to underline where they could relate, right? Where they think like Bill, where they feel like Bill, and where they eat or restrict like Bill. So I know last week you covered kind of that phenomenon, you know, we can see the results of it, but we can't really explain it, that happens to you when you're, you know, either having that food that triggers that phenomenon of craving, or when you start to restrict and you start to have that physiological experience. It's important to note and to bring all those things to this process. So writing them in the margin of your book, writing them on your idiot's guide, you know, and just being the watcher, you know, and asking, always saying the set-aside prayer, not just in the beginning of the section of the work, but constantly setting aside everything you think you know about your body, about your mind, about your dis-ease, right? About food, about God, about this program for an open mind and a new experience. If you're anything like me, you've probably exhausted every other fucking option. And still yet there may linger some resistance, you know, like this can't possibly be. It's funny for me, I mean, what we're looking at is if this problem is spiritual in nature, awesome, we have a spiritual solution. And so we live in this world that wants to tell us that the food problem is social, it's the media, it's emotional, it's my childhood, right? It's mental, my synapses aren't firing right. So we have all these explanations for what we're suffering. And for me, and Bill's going to reveal this to us as well, is that self-knowledge and knowledge of what I've been suffering from has never had the power to alleviate it. I just got a lot more knowledge. I just got a lot more info. I got, you know, a lot more kind of just like, you know, I got a lot more bogged down with the hopelessness of what I suffer from, but I never was directed, and I never found in these explanations that what I had been suffering from was a spiritual disease, and so that it was going to need a spiritual solution. So I was seeking to treat my mind, you know, and I was seeking to treat my body. I thought I was going to do it backwards, right? In the fourth step, those of you who aren't acclimated to this process, we're given this wonderful promise that when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And to me, as a food addict, that speaks so profoundly to the heart of what I've been going through, because I always thought that if I lost the right amount of weight, right, or in some cases if I put on the right amount of weight, that everything would be great, life would be wonderful, I could finally be happy. And so I was trying to treat my body, and then I thought, you know, treating the body, then my mind would unravel, I would stop having the body obsessions, I would stop doing the constant checking or comparing or looking in the mirror. And that would treat my mind, and then, you know, all of a sudden my condition, the internal condition that I suffer from, would then go away, because really I was really just bummed out and depressed and because of my weight or, you know, my body. That's all it was. And so as soon as I took care of that, and those of you who have experienced the depth of, you know, this condition, you know, having the quote-unquote right body never really took it away, right? So it's got to be deeper than that. But we're in the beginning of looking at the body and treating the mind like we always want to treat the mind. And there's amazing techniques, and I don't want to bag on the psychological field or any of that, and there's tons of treatment options that are so helpful. But I, in my experience, they lend support to this 12-step process. So they think of them as like a buttress. They help lend strength to this 12-step process. But I was looking for a way to be completely recovered, to be restored, to not just micromanage my life, because that's what I had been doing for so long, to not be lost in obsession, right, and a prisoner to my thoughts and to the food. I was looking, and, you know, I actually didn't know if I could ever find that here. I have experience with the 12 steps, and this was the last area. This is an area that I really had a lot of doubt in. So if you're on the line and you're fearful that this process isn't going to work for you, you're not alone. And I just implore you and I encourage you to seek for yourself, to go through with this process, and to find your truth, because, I mean, really we're given such a succinct way, a very simple way to achieve what I believe we're all aiming for, which is freedom. And that's certainly been my experience with this process, especially in this arena of food and body. So when we start off with Bill's story, I hope you crossed out Bill and you put in your name, and, you know, you want to examine, is this your story? Can you see where you feel like Bill? Where you eat or restrict like Bill? Where you think like Bill? So Bill's story's got this unique feature where, although we're only in the beginning part of the first step, we're in the body, we're in physical allergy, because it's his entire story, we get this cool thing where we glimpse the whole program. We're not going to cover that this week. We're just going to talk about his story in 1-8, top of 9 a little bit. But we get to actually see the program in action through his narrative. So war fever ran high in this New England town to which we knew young officers from Plattsburgh were assigned, right? I'm on page 1. And we were flattered when the first citizens took us into their homes, making us feel heroic. Here was love, applause, war, moments sublime with intervals hilarious. I was a part of life at last. And in the midst of the excitement, I discovered food. I discovered restricting. I forgot the strong warnings and the prejudices of my people concerning food, right? Like looking at your past, going back. In time, we sailed for over there. It was very lonely, and again, turned to food, right? I turned to food. I turned to restricting. So looking back and trying to really get the chronology of your affliction. When did this start? So Bill landed in England. He visited the Winchester Cathedral. Much moved, I wandered outside. My attention was caught by a verse on an old tombstone in Doggerel. And he gets his first ominous warning. So on that Doggerel, here lies a Hampshire grenadier who caught their death not eating, right, or overeating. So it's so important that even with these finite little details, I know we're going through Big Book Awakening, and it was written for addicts, alcoholics, and Al-Anon, but as food addicts and as restrictors, we have to get in there and get into the nitty-gritty and make this relatable for ourselves. So I want you to write on that tombstone that someone died suffering from what you're suffering from, right? And see it. Imagine it. You're standing in that cold graveyard, right? Fog's coming out of your mouth, right? You pull your scarf in a little tighter, and you see you're reading on this tombstone that someone has died in the manner of which you're suffering from, right? They died of overeating. They died of binging and purging. They died of anorexia. So that's an ominous warning, which I failed to heed. How many other ominous warnings in my life? And that's one of the questions. And when I take sponsees through, I pull the questions right out of the text. And so I want you to, like, put little stars, highlight it, you know, put some neon on it, set it on fire. Anything that calls out to you that you want to share about when we push the format to open sharing, you know, whatever's been brought up for you, take notes on it. So what were those ominous warnings that you failed to heed in your life? Right? Was it the first time you got a rush because someone complimented you on losing a little weight and it was just like, fuck yeah, yeah, I feel high. You know, that's physical, right? And that's what we're examining is what happens in my body when I get that compliment. What happens in my body when I take that bite of the food that I know is going to fucking make me crazy, right? Whatever that is for you. And it's time to get real about what that is for you, right? Like, what am I have to examine, what am I holding back from this set of steps? What am I living in fear of? Like, you know, maybe this process can have the peanut butter, for example, but it's not going to take my fucking chips, just for an example, right? So make that personal for you. So, 22 and a veteran of foreign wars, I went home at last. I fancied myself a leader, for not the men of my battery given me special token of appreciation. My talent for leadership, I imagined, would place me at the head of vast enterprises, which I would manage with the utmost of assurance. So sometimes this question throws people off. Did I envision myself as a leader? Not all people do, and you'll work with people, right? It's my hope that for you, as you guys learned on the first page of Doctor's Opinion, that as a part of our rehabilitation, we must present these ways in which we recover, right, this process, to still more others. It's a must. It's the first must. And so when you're set free of this, right, seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, that you'll take other people through, and maybe you're having some resistance on identifying as a leader. Other people do as well. So, like, I can answer that really easy. I always, you know, thought of myself as a leader, absolutely. And I have to see that there's something going on that has always set me apart, like the doctor talks about, as a separate and distinct entity. So where do I feel like, though? Emotionally, yeah, I'm a leader. I'm going to show the world that I'm something. Not, it doesn't apply for everyone, but you want them to see, or you want to be able to see, like, where does it apply to my life? So if I didn't think I was a leader, did I think I was the worst? Or did I withdraw from life, right? Did I just not want to be paid attention to at all? And I have to say that too, is not being one of, right? It's not being a part of. It's somehow setting myself apart. So Bill takes a night law course. I'm on the top of page 2, and obtained employment as an investigator for a surety company. And here we go again with that internal kind of that voice. The drive for success was on. So was I someone who was driven to succeed? And maybe I wasn't driven to succeed, but I was driven to just get by. Right? Am I driven to just kind of get by? And in terms of, like, my life, that could be interpreted as succeeding. That's success. So what do you think of as success, right? Make it personal to you. And are you driven to attain that, right? So I proved to the world I was important, right? I would show them, you know, if you have that underlined, you know, examine that. Like, am I thinking and feeling like Bill? Did I eat? Did I restrict as a means of showing the world that I was important? I was going to show the world that I had control, right? I was going to, you know, complete this diet. I was going to lose the weight, and I was going to show all those people that I could do it, right? I have the willpower. I have control. I will show them I'm important, right? So, or, you know what I mean? Like, so taking that statement and applying it to your life, where in your life do you attempt to show people that you have control? Do you attempt to show people that you are important? Skipping down the page, we start to see some of Bill's consequences from his behavior, right? His behavior happens to be alcohol. My behavior is, you know, binging, purging, restricting, overeating, cleansing, you know, crash dieting, so overexercise, all that shit. So though my behavior, whatever it is, fill that in right there, cross it out, fill in what it is for you, was not yet continuous, it disturbed my... You serve your wife, your husband, your boyfriend, girlfriend, your friends, your family. We had long talks when I was still there for votings by telling them that men of genius conceive their best projects when restricting, when overeating. You know, where am I living in that delusion in my life? Where am I believing that this behavior that's, you know, really, really torturing me is still a part of who I am, and that, you know, I can be successful at it. That the most majestic constructions of philosophical thought, right, that the most productivity were so derived, so that I can be a productive person while engaging in food obsession, restriction, overeating, binging, that I can make it work in my life. So, and that's question number 5, did I develop theories about how I could be successful in my life while continuing to be a food addict, right? Whether it's restricting, overeating, whatever it is for you, did you develop those theories in life? Are you still clinging to those theories? Are you open to seeing that this process will give you a way in which that you will be restored to sanity, right? So we start to look at these thoughts, and it'll go, as you continue on this first step experience, you'll start to identify those thoughts as insane, right? So here's like just the beginning, just a glimpse into that, and it's given to us in this really illustrative manner, just like showing you how it appears through Bill's life. So is that appearing in my life right now? Do I still think that I can control the way that I eat, right, or don't eat, and that I can be successful that way, that I'm going to have a good life just continuing on the way that I have been. So Bill goes on to talk about his life. Let's skip over to 3, right? So on the bottom of 2, actually. So him and Lois give up their positions. They wore off on a motorcycle, the sidecar stuffed with tent blankets, a change of clothes, and 3 huge volumes of financial reference. So our friends thought a lunacy commission should be appointed. Perhaps they were right. So did my friends ever think I was crazy? Did they see the rapid weight gain loss? Did they see my behaviors? I mean, for me, did they see, like, the next new fad or trend I was trying out? You know, did I try desperately to conceal my obsession and my body from other people? You know what I mean? Like, the pendulum, you know, can really swing from both extremes for sure. And then, you know, there are variants and grays. And it's important that we as food addicts, binge restrictors, that, you know, that we can be effective when we're working with others and that we can really illuminate those shadows of what we suffer from, right? And that this is an all-inclusive fellowship, and that we're here, and that we're joined in this common solution, right? So whatever you're on the phone with today, like, we suffered it, we found a way out, right? So, you know, I hope as I'm talking, you're asking these questions of yourself and always in the reflexive, and the reflective, like, is this true of me? Is this happening to me? Do my friends think I'm crazy? Is my family think I'm crazy? Am I hiding shit from people? So for me, yes. Yeah, absolutely. I've been in both situations where I was either, like, I had all this bravado because I thought in my life exerting some control, power, and choice. And, you know, I either wanted everyone to see, or, you know, the weight would come back and I didn't want anyone to see. Or I would, like, take it a little too far and lose too much weight, and then I really didn't want anybody to see, and then I was, like, covering it up, you know, never able to just be, right? So perhaps they were right. He has some success at speculation, so we had little money. We had to once work on a farm from drawing to avoid on capital. And, you know, that was the last honest manual labor on my part too many a day. So Bill's going to go into kind of the particulars of his life. And again, if any of this calls to you, I want you to be writing in the margins, like, little pieces of your life that relate, you know. Was there a time that, you know, you went on a total adventure just, you know, to prove to the world that you were somebody? And you know what I mean? Like, where are you, like, Bill? So for the next few years, fortune threw money and applause my way. I had arrived. So how long? Sometimes that stretch of time for us is, like, real short. For me, it was. It would be like, oh, for the next couple weeks, I could control myself. For the next couple weeks, I, you know, had the drain body that I, whatever it is. For the next couple weeks, I was going to yoga all the time, and I felt, you know, that I wasn't, like, a complete waste of whatever it is, right? And that's also what we're seeking freedom from. For me, and in my experience of working with others, a lot of this malady and a lot of it manifests in the mental obsession and, like, kind of that negative self-talk that's going on. And, you know, I'm really stoked that everybody's participating in this, because there's so much freedom that's going to come through it. And when you get into mental obsession and start examining that, it's going to be, like, super, super freeing. So when had you arrived? Had you arrived? Had you had that experience? Right? Have you, you know, my judgment and ideas were followed by the tune of paper millions. The great boom in the late 20s was seething and swelling. Food, restricting, overeating, purging, binging, whatever it is for you, was taking an important and exhilarating part in my life, right? So did the way that I behaved around food and body become more and more important over time? Did it become the center of my life? How much of my day did I spend planning out, right, what I was going to eat, or in an activity that was going to burn off what I had eaten or expel it from my body? So could I see that this has been a progression, right, that it became more and more important? It became an exhilarating, right? That's the word he uses. It became an exhilarating part of my life. So, and a little further down the page, on page 3, everyone spent in thousands and chattered in millions, right? Scoffers, I underline this, scoffers could scoff and be damned, right? And there's always, like, the nosy relative or concerned friend, right, just kind of trying to clock the way I eat or how my body's looking, and they could, you know, they could scoff and be damned. I was going to show them that I had control. So that's question 8. Did my behavior around food become more serious? So I realize a lot of you are using the Idiot's Guide, the Food Idiot's Guide, which is rad. Glad you're doing that. And I would even encourage you, if at some point if there's some particular of your affliction, like, get specific. So I usually do that with my Idiot's Guide. It's all cross out words and make it really, really personal to me. So that's kind of what I'm doing right now on the phone is I'm shaping those questions into like personal kind of custom, this is what is coming up for me, questions. So did I become right? And that's the second part. So I made a host of fair weather friends, right? I made a host of yes people. Or I completely isolated because I couldn't have anyone around me who knew me, who could make observations on me, right? So my eating behaviors assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day, and my obsession would last every night. The remonstrances, right, the objections of my friends terminated in a row. So we were fighting about and sometimes it was disguised as another issue, but it was really about me wanting to withdraw from life or anyone who could make observations on me, right? So you have to relate this to you. If that's not true, turn it into, so how does this statement become true for you? So I became a lone wolf. Did you become a lone wolf? Right. There were many unhappy scenes in our sumptuous apartment. And then Bill talks about infidelity, right? So maybe there's infidelity in your story. Maybe there's not. But again, finding where you and Bill, like Bill's a total food addict, and that should become apparent through this examination. Like, whoa, Bill's just like me. So he goes, it's cool. I mean, our BBA gives us all this historical information. So a lot of times, like the first part of this transcribing that you did, I'm sure you noticed, is a lot of definitions of words that are a little antiquated. And then these historical references. So he talks about Walter Hagen. He's going to talk about Napoleon. And really what the reason why we're doing that is so that when we meet with another person, we're able to transmit an experience. So I can't understand what the book is saying if I literally can't understand what the book is saying, right? So I'm given definitions and I'm given these little historical footnotes so that I literally can understand everything that's being said to me. Otherwise, I'm just shutting down about Napoleon and St. Alba, and then all of a sudden I'm missing the connection that is meant to be forged between me and Bill. Right? I hope that makes sense. So he goes out, he wants to be a golf champion, right? And he goes out, he's trying to get an impeccable coat of tan, and whoops, like golf permits eating all day, right? Golf permits this buffet, or golf encourages having a toned physique, so now I can restrict. So whatever is going on for you, you want to find that in this story. So what activity permits this, and then you were then able to go right on ahead with it, right? So skipping down to the middle of the page on 4. So then the stock market crashes, right? And Bill says, I was finished and so were many friends. The papers reported men jumping from death from the towers of high finance. Also, take a little just fun fact. Just notice that high finance is all caps, right? So we can see, and then later, my creator, intelligent, spirit of the universe, all those things are going to be capitalized. So we can see here what Bill sees as his higher power in the early stages, right? Page 4, high finance is capitalized, where later God will be capitalized, right? So where have I capitalized food? You know, where have I capitalized binging? Where have I capitalized purging? Where have I capitalized restricting? So what has been my higher power, right? What has been the source of my life up until this point? So Bill's disgusted by that. Continuing on, I would not jump. I went back to the buffet, right? I went back to the bathroom. I went back to my room. Did it kind of shows, like, that's another question. Did I eat or restrict to escape problems brought on from eating and restricting? You know, hence becoming that vicious cycle. that is illuminated in this process, right? We have a spiritual malady that sets up the mental obsession that will always result in the phenomenon of craving when we pick up or when we stop picking up. So where in my life and when in my life have I acted out in my food and body stuff to avoid problems brought about by my food and body stuff, right? And you want to answer that for yourself. So my friends had dropped several million since 10 o'clock, so what? Tomorrow was another day. As I ate, right, or as I stopped eating, as I started restricting, the old fierce determination to win came back. So where has that happened in my life? And then Bill will go on to describe kind of his series of, like, you know, and I mean, that's so important to put down your experience next to his and see where there's similarities. So he goes and stays with a friend in Canada. He's like, yeah, I'm Napoleon. Yes, this is, I'm doing it. I'm making it. And then that opportunity ends. So where in your life were you, like, back on your game, it was working for you, and then, you know, then those hopes were dashed. So just on the top of page 4, it was fun to caroll around the exclusive course. So for some reason, that word doesn't get defined in the Big Book Awakening, but I want you to think about it as it's commonly used in billiards, so think about a ball striking and then bouncing back. So it's like to strike and rebound. So where have I been just like kind of going through my life like that with restricting, with binging, with overeating, with food addiction, just kind of having it just literally ricochet me off everything, right? So on the top of 5, I became an unwelcome hanger-oner at, and then you need to fill in the blank, right? And that's another question. Did I become an unwelcome hanger-oner and where? So, you know, did I become an unwelcome hanger-oner at whatever's relevant for you, right? So for me, you know, I would have, like, specific grocery stores that no one would know me at so I could go make my binge purchases, right? Just, like, completely blacked out, disconnected, just, You know, some people have that I work with, they have like restaurants that they would feel comfortable going into, or, you know, on the other scale of things, like, you know, specific gyms, you know, whatever it is for you, where people, you know, where you becoming an unwelcome hanger-oner, you know. So 12, food ceased to be a luxury, it became a necessity. So not necessarily food, right, but you want to take a look at the behavior. So binging ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. So, you know, maybe in the beginning of your life, it was just like something that would sporadically happen, right? It was a treat. You just kind of let yourself go off and go for it. And it started to happen more and more frequently. Right? The same is true of restricting, right? So I'm just, it's summer, you know, all these excuses we give ourselves. I'm going to get my beach bod, whatever. I'm just going to, you know, restrict today, or, you know, special occasion. I want to get into this particular outfit, or I have to go be in front of these people, you know, reunion, whatever, you know, the mind sets up. And it was just a special occasion. It was a luxury. And can I see, where did it become a necessity? Has it become a necessity? Is it a necessity? You know what I mean? So constantly asking these questions of yourself, is this process describing me? The more I can see that this process describes me, can I submit and surrender to the solution? So it's imperative that I find myself and I find my truth in these pages. This isn't everyone. Right, this isn't everyone, but if you continue to go on and see yourself in this work, I want to give you the hope that there is a solution for this. So it became a necessity, right? And then skipping down further, I have this box, can highlight it. This went on endlessly. Have you written out your story? You know, and what does that look like? Have you done a journaling exercise on the progression of your, you know, of your affliction? What does it look like? Has it been like, have you been, you know, ricocheting back and forth and back and forth? Has it gone on endlessly for you? So gradually, skipping down second paragraph, gradually things got worse, right, as they're wont to do. And, you know, their house gets taken over, the mother-in-law, like horrible things, right? My wife and my father-in-law became ill. Then, whoops, looks like something's looking up. Then I got a promising business opportunity. Staffs were at a low point, I was to share, here we go, I was to share generously in the profits. Then I went on a prodigious bender, and that chance vanished. So can I come up with an example? I always have my sponsors do that. What's an example? Like something was going to go your way. Maybe you weren't going to strike it rich on the stock market, okay? But something was going your way, and then for no reason, right, no explanation, you went on a binge or you started restricting, and that chance vanished. Right, so we're starting to look at the external consequences of the internal experience. So I can't even explain, just like you covered last week in Doctor's Opinion. Like, we're not overeating or restricting because times are good or times are bad. We're overeating or restricting because of a physical phenomenon, an allergy of craving beyond our mental control. So whatever it is for you, once I take that bite, I can't control what's going to happen, the amount I'm going to take of what I'm going to do and what it's going to lead me to. Or once I start to restrict, I can't tell you when I'm going to eat again because I'm stuck in that feeling and I need to continue on with that behavior. So I want you to come up with an example, you know, and maybe when we open it up for sharing, somebody can share, you know, we can get a couple shares about what are some examples of times in your life when something was really, you know, some, you know, curtain was up, you know, everything was about to hit the heights, something was really going your way, and then you took that, you know, because of lack of power, right? No power, powerlessness. That's what we're examining, right? This concept of deep powerlessness. That opportunity vanished because of food and body behaviors. So Bill wakes up. I'm on paragraph 4. I woke up. Had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one bite, right? I couldn't take one more bite of that type of food, or I couldn't stay on this diet. I couldn't stop. I couldn't not eat. So I'm gonna get up, and I think I'm going to eat. And in quotes, I was through forever. How many times have I said that, right? In all earnestness, right? I've meant it before. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed, my friends happily observed, my family saw that this time I meant business, and so I did. Uh-oh. Shortly afterward, I came home, you know, after a binge. I came home and binged. I came home and, you know, I hadn't eaten all day. I came home having exercise. You know, I came home and got the laxatives out, whatever, right? There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind, right? So I, even though we're early on in the game, like it's giving me, again, Bill's story alludes to other parts of it alludes to the whole process. And he's letting us glimpse right now that the solution isn't in the mind, and it's not going to be through treating the mind, because it hadn't even come to mind. I'd been through forever, right? I meant it. And it hadn't even come to mind. I hadn't even given up a fight. I didn't even care. Or it hadn't even occurred to me, right? Someone had offered me something, or something had struck me in a certain way. I heard something on the radio. Somebody said something, and I just went for it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that, right? So Bill starts to evaluate his own sanity. right? Was I insane? It's an appalling lack of perspective. I know what happens to me when I overeat, and yet I continue to overeat. I know what happens to me when I restrict, and yet I continue to restrict, right? So renewing my resolve, I tried again. Here we go again. How many times have I tried again? Let me try again. Let me just do it, you know. I'm going to do it. I'm going to control it. I'm going to fix it. Some time passed, and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. So that's a warning in there, kind of embedded in there. I need to take note of it. Okay, they're warning me. That's not the kind of attitude I should have in this process. If I get cocksure, if I get arrogant, it's not recovered. It's not treated. So I could laugh at what can you laugh at? So write that in right now. Can you laugh at, you know, the chip aisle? Can you laugh at the 24-hour fitness? Can you laugh at whatever it is? Write it in. Now I have what it takes. One day I walked into a cafe to tell, I'm just doing my life. Bill's just doing his life, right? In no time, I was beating on the table, whatever. I was beating on the mirror, asking myself how it happened, right? As the food or as the high from not eating rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well go for it this time, and I did. So how many times did I slip and fall from my prescribed course of action and then think, well, I'm already here already. I might as well make it worth my while. You know, I'll go on the diet next week. Or I'll start eating again next week. So this internal suffering is just, he lays it out for us, right? Next paragraph, the remorse, horror, and hopelessness of the next morning are unforgettable. How many times have I experienced that, right? You want to be asking yourself, how many times have I felt this way? And isn't that, in fact, what I want freedom from? Right, but I've been unable to affect it on my own. The shame and the horror and the hopelessness and the remorse that I experience after I act out with food have never been sufficient enough to keep me from acting out on food. And let's read on. They're not sufficient enough for him either. The courage to do battle was not there. My brain raced uncontrollably, right? Those obsessive thoughts. And there was a terrible sense of impending calamity. That's another question. Like, where in my life have I felt that impending calamity, that doom? Like, the sky is fucking always constantly falling. Always in anxiety, right? Fear about the future, depression, just, like, regret about the past, right? And being driven by it. So I hardly dared cross the street lest I collapse and be run down by an early morning truck, for it was scarcely daylight, and all night place supplied me with whatever I needed, right? Whatever that is that was on that shopping list. My writhing nerves were stilled at last. A morning paper told me the market had gone to hell again, right? So life around me isn't going the way I want it to go again. Well, so had I. The market would recover, but I wouldn't. That was a hard thought. Should I kill myself? So how many times have I thought of suicide? You know, have I thought of suicide? If I haven't, could I imagine my life continuing on the current trajectory that it's on, untreated? Would I think of suicide? Would I escape through suicide? Would that be my only option? And Bill says, no, not now. Then a mental fog settled down, right? A binge or a restriction would fix that. So, oblivion. He goes on to say, the mind and body are marvelous mechanisms. The mind endured this agony. And then write, how long has your body endured the agony of your disease? Sometimes I stole, right? So he's going to talk about. And then he would sway dizzily in front of the right, constantly contemplating suicide, some sort of escape. Going on to page 7. So he has a doctor try to treat him with a heavy sedative as a means of getting off alcohol, but I want you to write down the ways in which you've tried to treat yourself, or even doctors have tried to treat you, right? So what sort of pills have been prescribed or taken over the counter? What sort of methods have you attempted to treat this? So whoops, next day, I'm on the top of 7, the doctor found him, you know, drinking both the gin and the sedative. So for me, it's like the next day, I, you know, either completely abandoned the method that I was trying to treat my disease with, or like I was doing some, you know, whacked out weird combination of things that were just serving to, you know, generate more obsessive thoughts and attempts at control. So where in your life and with what have you done that? You know what I mean? So I want you to write that in the margin. So that combination soon landed me on the rocks. People feared for my sanity. So did I. I could eat little or nothing, right? Or I could not stop eating at all. I was 40 pounds under or overweight. So my brother-in-law physician, through his kindness and that of my mother, was placed in a nationally known hospital for mental and physical rehabilitation of food addicts, of whatever it is, right, of bulimics, of anorexics. Under the so-called Belladonna treatment, my brain cleared. Hydrotherapy and mild exercise helped much. Best of all, I met a doctor who explained, though certainly selfish and foolish, I've been seriously ill, bodily and mentally. So that's another question. Did I seek help, gain knowledge, learn my relapse triggers? Did I get in touch with my feelings? You know, and did this knowledge, did this self-knowledge alone work? Or did I overeat again? Did I restrict again? Right, so even knowledge that we gain from the 12-step process, the guide tells us. So even knowledge, if you've done this process before and you haven't been catapulted into that fourth dimension of existence, right, where you are completely at peace, contented, restored, and recovered, regardless of anything else in whatever your other circumstances are in life, if you haven't been set free, you want to set aside everything you think you know about the 12 steps. Right, and about the freedom that can be found through them. So moving down the page, he talks about it relieved me somewhat to learn that in food addicts, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating food and body obsession. Though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. But it was not. For the frightful day came when I overate again, right, when I started restricting again. The curve of my declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. After a time, I returned to the hospital. This is the finish, the curtain, it seemed to me. My wearing and despairing wife, right, my family, my friends, they were informed that it would all end with heart failure during, you know, during delirium tremens, or I would develop a wet brain. And we can list the physical consequences of body behavior. Like, you know what I mean? There's a long list, and I'm sure, you know, we're all acquainted with them. So, like, in your margin, get specific. What are the physical consequences? And, like, you know, see how the knowledge of his physical consequences of what he was suffering from didn't keep his alcoholic behavior, right? Can I see that the physical consequences of the way I behave around food has never kept me from behaving that way around food? So I would end up in the asylum, right? The undertaker of the asylum. I'm going to end up dead or locked away. So they didn't need to tell me, bottom of seven. I knew and almost welcomed the idea. Right, again, thoughts of escape through death. We're a little more passive this time. He's not swinging, and he's not, like, swaying in front of the sash in the window, right? But he's, like, you know, hoping to just die this way. How many times have I hoped to just kind of die, right? Untreated and in the throes of this disease, how many times did I just hope to die, right? You want to write that. It was a devastating blow to my pride. I, who had thought so well of myself and my ability, and my abilities and my capacity to surmount obstacles was cornered at last. Now I was to plunge into the dark, joining that endless procession of thoughts who had gone on before. Right? He's having this reflection of his life. Oh, my poor wife, right? My poor family, my poor boyfriend, girlfriend, my poor friends. And I want you to think about how many times have we ruminated on that, and, you know, to no avail. There had been much happiness after all, right? My life hasn't been all bad. What would I not give to make amends? But that's over now. Again, the description of the feeling, no words can tell of the loneliness and despair that I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. The circle self-pity, right? We're getting a glimpse into the depth of this condition. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. So, you know, what's your master? Is your obsession with the body your master? Is your binge foods the master? Is your restrictive behavior or your goal weight your master? Is your scale your master? Is the mirror your master? And right in that, right? So trembling, I stepped from the hospital, a broken man, for so fear kept me abstinent for a bit. Then the insidious insanity of that first bite, of that first restriction, came, and I was off again. Everyone became resigned to the certainty that I would have to be shut up somewhere, or I would stumble along to a miserable end. How dark it is before the dawn. In reality, that was the beginning of my last debauch. I was soon, right? And it's like, wait a second. So what could have happened to have changed that? He was about to die, right? In a lot of ways, a lot of us may be at that place where we're literally at a turning place. It's just as dark for Bill, right? It's just as dark for me as it was for Bill. And he's telling me it's about to dawn. So in reality, I was soon to be catapulted into what I like to call the fourth dimension of existence. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. So do I want that? Those are the promises of this process. So near the end of that bleak November, I sat in my kitchen, and then I'm going to stop there because I believe you guys are going to pick up with that. That's actually where Bill's recovery begins, right? So we're going to end there, and I want to open it up to sharing on anything, any of the questions that you want to, if you want to, I think it's really, really important, and I think it's beneficial for us to share those specific instances in our life that really jump off the page to us and illuminate and illustrate Bill's story, right? So how is it your story? Like, I want to hear about, you know, your life and times that that you lost control, power, and choice, that times like what Bill described, that you were something like was about to go your way and then you lost it, times in which you were lonely and you turned to that behavior. And I want to open it up to any questions as well. Thank you.
Leilani, I just want to say thank you so much. That was incredible. And I know that we all benefited. I'm going to speak for all of us because that was just, I mean, to receive that and to really go through the whole reading with just illuminating more questions was amazing. And yeah, so that's all I wanted to say. And I love that you're leading in this. So I'm going to mute myself and I really invite anyone to come on and to share.
Hi, my name is Shannon. I'm bulimic compulsive eater from San Diego. Leilani, wow, and Deb, thank you so much for sharing. And, you know, I really love the recommendation to make this as relatable as possible to your own life. And as we were going through it today, you know, again and again, seeing Bill renew his resolve and fail, I think back to my experience, which was 8 years of bulimic compulsive overeating hell that began when I was a teenager. And, you know, the first time, you know, Bill says, I meant business this time at one point. And the first time I meant business, I was going to stop binging. I was going to stop purging with my sister, my little baby sister. She was not a baby anymore, actually. She was 12 or 13. She hid in the bathroom cupboards because she knew after dinner I would go and pretend I was taking a shower or a bath and puke. And she came busting out of them, and I remember I was, you know, my hands were in my throat. I was leaning over the toilet and starting to purge, and she said, please stop, and she started weeping. and I looked into her eyes, and I had only been bulimic for maybe 6 months, but I knew that it was getting a grip on me. You know, I knew I had the brief high of the weight loss, and I experienced a lot of exhilaration from, you know, when someone told me, wow, you look good. It was like the highest high I'd ever felt. It was, oh my God, I look good. I'm seen. I'm noticeable. You know, yes, give me more. But when I saw my sister's eyes like that, I thought, I can't do this. I'm done. And I kid you not, that night there I was binging again. And for 8 more years, that was my experience, you know. And I eventually, you know, I went to rehab. I think I lasted maybe 2 weeks after rehab. Then I was binging and purging again, despite having family week, my sister now 5 years later coming, begging me to get better, me looking into her eyes, promising her I would. I finally found the rooms of the 12 steps. And, you know, I went to a lot of meetings, but I did not enlarge my spiritual life. And but the result of going to a lot of meetings had gotten me my dream job. I was working with animals. I was in a relationship with someone that I loved, and we were living in a beautiful little tiny apartment by the beach. And on Valentine's Day, a perfect day, not a cloud in the sky, he had to go into work. And I thought, after 8 months of abstinence, that I would just stop into 7-Eleven and grab myself, I think, a bag of cookies, which turned into a full-blown binge, which resulted in 6 months of nonstop binging and purging. And, of course, at the time when I did it, I thought to myself, it's only going to be this one time. I had all the knowledge in the world about the steps, about rehab, about therapy, everything, you know. And I even carried a picture of my little sister in my back pocket around, hoping I would look at it and stop, you know. And the fact for me was I continued binging, purging, so I almost lost my job. I lost the relationship. I had to move out of that beach house and live on my own. And I continued just plummeting into this disease to the point where, you know, it was endless. It had been 8 years of this, and I had lost everything. And yet knowing that couldn't stop me. Knowing that was not enough. And so, you know, I changed my name in here. I changed Bill's name to my name. I changed all of these experiences he goes through, from his confidence in the beginning to his complete suicidal thoughts at the end to my own. And, you know, it's truly saved my life going through the work this way. So I just wanted to share kind of just a little bit of my, you know, endless attempts to stop this progressive illness with knowledge and, you know, sincere emotional promises. And, you know, we'll get more into all of the ways as we go throughout the work that we delude ourselves into thinking we can do this on our own or without God. And I certainly had a lot of experience with that. So anyway, just thank you so much for sharing, Leilani, and I'll stop talking now.
Tammy, are you still on the line? If Tammy is on the line, would you share?
Hey, Leilani, it's Deb. Do you want to just pose some of the specific questions that people
yeah.
can just read their answers to?
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't make us call you out.
So has anybody on the call, does anybody want to share on developing theories about how they would be successful in life while continuing in their food or body obsession behavior?
Let's hear from Cammy. Cammy, you on the phone?
Great.
Hello. Yeah,
can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Cammy, compulsive overeater, bulimic, anorexic, body obsessor. Wow, that was wonderful. Thank you. And thank you, Shannon, for your share, and Leilani. I personalized Bill's story. I'm all over Bill's story, all over these pages, and I personalized it to everything that relates to me, and it has opened up a world for me that was not like anything with any other thing that I suffered from. I related this to my drug and alcohol addiction and other things, but it was never as true for me as it was going through with the food. And so I've been super grateful for that. And, I always thought that I was going to be a successful nurse. I'm a registered nurse now, and going through the progression of my disease, I would be in the middle of a binge or in the middle of a debacle. And I would think, it's all going to be okay. It's all going to be okay. I'm going to get a good job. I'm going to get good money. I'm going to get that body I've always wanted. And I would have these failed attempts every time to think that tomorrow it's going to be okay. I'm going to stop this one more time. And over and over and over, I would live in these delusions that this is how I was going to make it, and if I could just get this under control, then everything else would be okay. And, what happened for me is that I did lose 40 pounds, and I did get that body that I had always dreamed of through absolute insanity through this disease, torturing my body and in all these ways, restricting, over-exercising, binging and purging. And I had finally been able to pull it off, what I had always thought was really going to make me happy. And I had the perfect body. I was a trainer at the gym. I was the fitness manager for Custom Built Personal Training. And I, shortly after that, went out into my garage. And I was taking diet pills. I was doing everything and to try to keep this body, because now once I had it, I wanted to keep it, and that was even torturous in and of itself. And the obsession got worse, the body obsession got worse, the bulimia got worse, the financial problems and relationship problems got worse. My body, I had stopped having a menstrual period for that whole year, and everything in my disease, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, got so bad at that perfect weight that I went out in my garage and I swung from a rafter that I had found to see if it would hold my weight, because I was going to kill myself. I was just done, and I could not stop. And this was just one time that I was swearing off forever, and I wasn't going to do this anymore, and I was going to get some help. And then I went to therapy, and then I tried to get on Prozac, and then I did emotional sobriety, and then I thought maybe my problem is Al-Anon. And, through this whole situation, knowing that I'm hopeless, knowing that I'm Bill, and knowing that there's no hope for me, and continuing to go on this way for up until now, which it's been another 2.5 years of a 12-year battle, and finally coming to this work, and I want to say that I am Bill, absolutely, and I am all of you, absolutely. And everything Leilani spoke of was exactly to a T where I'm at, what I've experienced, how I felt, how I ate, how I restricted, how hopeless I am. And that last paragraph on page 9, that last sentence that she read is where I've stopped before in the book, and I love that it ends it with just a little bit of hope, because as we're going through this, I am watching and I am seeing how hopeless I am, and that I don't really yet believe that I can have the freedom that I've always dreamed of around this area, and that that's okay. I don't have to really believe that I'm going to be as free as I want to be at this point in the work. I just have to keep watching and seeing where my powerlessness is and where I fail with my own self-will and self-knowledge over and over again. Because even though I know how hopeless I am, and even though I completely understand to the bottom of my heart how none of these things will fix me, I still try to do them. And that's what's baffling to me. I still try to attempt to control and fix this disease with all other things, and that's just because I haven't yet accessed the power and gone through enough of the work to get to this power, and that's okay. And Leilani had touched on that when she said it's almost imperative that you see these things are going on so that, you know, so that you can be clear on your step. And I am, today, I'm giving myself permission to be okay with being sick today and knowing that there is hope, that today watching this disease where it's at, so that when I do get to the hope that I can stay in the desperation of step one, always knowing that, that God is the answer, if that makes sense. So thanks for calling me to share, and thank you, ladies, so very, very much for being who you are and going through this work and sharing this message. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Cammie. You want to pull another question? Okay, I'll pull another question.
do you want to do? I always love self knowledge, right?
Yeah.
So let's look at did I believe that knowledge of my condition would fix it? So a 15B, did this self-knowledge alone work, or did I act out in my food and body behaviors again, right? So even, I think, thank you so much, Cammie and Shannon, for your shares. So then both addressed that. So did self-knowledge, even knowledge gained from the program, fix the problem?
This is Lauren. I'll answer that that question. The self-knowledge really did avail me nothing, and in fact, being smart and knowing about myself was a major liability. I wished that I didn't inquire, that I didn't use the self-knowledge that I had to convince myself that it doesn't apply to me, or I can take care of that, or I just need to eliminate this one thing. And then the thousands and thousands of dollars in therapy that I spent thinking that once I understood whatever the magic, you know, issue was, that I would stop. But the problem with all of those things, while I think that therapy is a very good thing for what I didn't have was any, like, anchor to, I just didn't have, like, a bay to put my ship and anchor it. And that is what God does. I didn't have any spiritual answer, or I didn't have a God to go to admit that I didn't have the answer, even though I was trying extremely hard to figure out why I did this. And when I think about the self-knowledge, what I have to really remember is that I have a spiritual malady, because then it takes the onus off of my mind and it lets me put it in God's hands. And that provides me a lot of relief. And the relief is primarily from my head and my way of thinking, because my default way of thinking is, I'm smart, I can handle this. But I can't. I need the spiritual aspect of this program so that I don't have to do it on my own. Trying to do it on my own has never worked. I've tried it numerous times. It has never worked. So I just want to share that.
Thank you, Lauren.
Hey, Deb, this is Shannon again from San Diego.
Hi, Shannon. Yeah.
Hey, I wanted to share on self-knowledge, too, because
I felt that, I swear I was going to say to Leilani, I think someone else wants to share on self-knowledge. Thank you. Okay, I'm muting myself. Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to say, you know, I look back, and I can have some compassion for myself now because, you know, we live in a society where Oprah's telling us how to do it, and this diet's telling us how to do it, and, you know, there's a lot of messages out there. I mean, every day when I drove to work there, I passed this Latman billboard, and, you know, and then I passed, I forget, like a Weight Watchers billboard, like just in a 10-minute drive, you know, and those solutions, I saw them work for some people I knew, you know, but those people didn't relate or wouldn't relate to Bill's story in the way that I do. They're not a real compulsive overeater. They're maybe a hard, and I know we get into that later, but, you know, God, the shame I felt for so long because I tried method after method and things that worked for my mother, you know, she just kind of got, you know, she was like, oh, I don't feel comfortable in my body, and here's this diet, and she would follow it and do it. Or I had another friend who went to therapy, and she was actually, her behaviors around food looked more out of control than mine on the outside, you know. And she went to therapy and got better, you know, and then I would be in therapy for 8 more years not getting better. And not to this therapy at all, I think it can be very helpful in as a complement to this program. But for me, the only thing that has ever worked is having an experience, a real experience through these steps. And, you know, for me, I had the knowledge that I was supposed to do this. And so even that, like I got into the rooms and I kind of have this good girl syndrome, and so I do what you tell me to do, but I'm doing it because I know I should be doing it and not because I've had an experience with my own hopelessness, you know? And so, like, yeah, sure, I'm hopeless. Sure, I believe in God. Sure, but, you know, I wasn't really making this thing my own. I really wasn't, and therefore I didn't have an experience of depth and weight. I didn't have a spiritual experience, and so I continued to be lost for a while in the 12 steps because I was really hoping I could reach this point of understanding even with that, and that didn't work either. So that was kind of the last straw for me after trying every diet, every form of therapy, after going to rehab and having enough information to be a nutritionist, and then showing up in the room and still getting all this knowledge, but really not giving myself permission to personalize it to me and make this my own and ask myself, take the path of consideration, is this my truth? You know, do I need a God in my life? Am I hopeless? And once that started happening, everything began to change, you know, but it was almost like I had to try everything I saw everyone around me doing. And today in our society, I mean, everyone I worked with was on some kind of cleanse or diet or fast. I worked with a lot of women and, you know, they would go to the and I was just trying to be a normie, you know, and that really didn't work, but brought a lot of shame
into my life. And I look back, I have some compassion for myself now about that. And I know that I have to keep doing this work in this way because I need to continue having an experience. You know, so anyway, thanks for letting me share.
Shannon, thank you so much. I'm feeling really called to ask this question, if you don't mind, Leilani. Because I've been talking with some of you, and I don't want to call anyone out, but I've been talking with a number of you this week and over the last few days, who have identified a sense of loneliness and despair and self-pity. And so question number 17, did you feel loneliness and despair and self-pity? And you can answer this. It's kind of, I almost want to take like three questions in one, because the very first question that we get is, did you turn to acting out around food when you were lonely? So you could speak on that. And then in question number 10, we get, did you begin to act out around food to escape from problems sometimes brought on by the acting out behavior, the compulsive eating, binging, purging, restricting, or over-exercising? And then we get this question, number 17, did you feel loneliness, despair, and self-pity? And did you ever feel that food was your master? And for those of you who thank you for reading my poem that I sent out this week, Slave Quarter, where it really was about feeling like I have this master of my disease. So would love to hear from the people who I know are feeling this right now. So I just want to also emphasize that you don't have to wait until you have the solution to be able to share where you're at right now. In fact, a lot of people might be able to really, really relate to you and feel like they're not alone if you have the willingness and the courage to share.
My name's Tammy. I'm a food addict in bulimic.
Hey, Tam.
Hey. I feel called to share on this one, even though I haven't talked to you about it. This is a big one for me. I think this has been one of the loneliness, you know, because my mom had passed, and your world kind of changes, you know, and it's like trying to re-find yourself and who you are, even though she, you know, there was dysfunction. I mean, she was kind of the one rock, and then my family kind of fell apart after her death. It's so. And then my son grew, you know, he's 18 and kind of doing his distance thing. So there was this real sense of loneliness, you know, and this, I don't want to get all emotional, despair. And it hits me a lot. But what I see in my illness with food and it's been very tough with the food lately and the binges and physically just craving and praying to God. Thank you so much for saying that, Leilani, because it has been difficult. And I pray to God, and I'm not getting the relief that I'm hoping, you know, to get. It's still there, and it's just constantly there. I have a lot going on with work, and I feel this sense of loneliness there, and the self-pity is like my freaking worst enemy, and because that's where I go, and I don't want to be that victim, but yet I fall to this, that, you know, I fall self-pity and this victimhood, and I don't want to be that person, but my whole world changed this last year and a half. But what I started saying was with this illness, I've created that loneliness. I mean, I literally will hide in the house the whole weekend. I mean, I'm done, you know. I mean, I go to work and I show up and then I don't have much of a life. So, you know, food is my master. It still continues to be my master. And, you know, the cravings and it still calling me,
it's not a good place to be, but I'm having an experience. Is what I guess I could say is I'm having the experience with the first step, and I am watching it, and I see what happens, and it's so powerful, so powerful. Anyway, I just wanted to share that. Thanks.
Thanks, Tammy. Anybody else want to share on the same topic of loneliness, despair, self-pity, if you feel like food is your master or starving is your master?
Hi, I'm Jan Burbank, compulsive eater.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah, there's a funny little feedback thing that's going on. I don't know why. Are you?
Wow.
I'm gonna start with myself, and then maybe it'll be better for you.
Okay. I'm related so much to the stairs, and I wanted to shift out. I'm gonna go to a different room to get that help. I wanted to share about relating to what someone was saying. I had a really nice last evening. Is this echoing?
Breaking up.
Pardon me?
Yeah, it's echoing pretty badly. I'm not actually sure why.
Okay, I'll share next week. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Dave, can you hear me?
Yeah, who's that?
This is Cheryl, compulsive overeater from New Zealand.
Hi,
I just wasn't sure.
Hi, Cheryl.
Okay.
Hi, Shannon. I don't know why our phone is doing this.
Okay.
All right.
I just wanted to share on the feeling of loneliness, despair, and self-pity. I went and grabbed my journal and had a look at my question, you know, and what my answer to that was. And it was exclamation marks frequently. And you know, I'd written that these are some of the emotions that drive me back to the certain foods that I always went looking for to remove that, you know, spiritual malady that was still very active in me. And, you know, and I felt that despair that God won't help me, you know, when I'm sitting in that place of the self-pity and the loneliness and thinking, well, what's the point, I'm overeat. But, and I hear and see, witness in other people's lives, God helping them. And I think he won't help me because I'm not good enough. And it all just feeds into that corrosion of my own spirit. And, you know, I'm so grateful that this has moved away. As I've moved through the process of doing BBA again for the second time, and, you know, and it really wasn't that long ago. It was only maybe 6 weeks ago I was answering that question. And, you know, even in that period of time of just continuing to work through the assignments and coming from that place of sitting in that despair and self-pity and isolation, you know, how just continuing through with the work, how God has worked in me in spite of me. And I think that's a beautiful thing of what I've, you know, come to see through this process of just, you know, plodding on in spite of myself and not listening to my head and not engaging with the suffering of it all. You know, I have to just keep going to God, and because I can get really obsessed about anything. And one of the things that, you know, through the reading today, it has, you know, brought to the surface for me is, you know, what am I obsessing about? You know, to take that away and meditate with that, because, you know, pretty much today I'm experiencing quite a lot of freedom, and I was, you know, talking to my higher power saying, you know, am I just self-deluded at the moment? You know, have I really got all this freedom, or am I just not seeing, you know, what you're trying to show me? So it's a question I sit with for myself, and I'm sure, you know, my higher power will answer that for me, but... yeah, what I've taken out of today is to just go to meditation and see, you know, is there anything sitting on the edge that is still, you know, taking my energy and taking my peace, and usually it shows itself pretty clearly, you know, when I'm disturbed. I feel it pretty quickly these days. But I'm just so grateful to look back and to see that I'm not living in that suffering today, and it was purely as a result of continuing to do this work. So I just wanted to share that, and I'll leave it there. Thanks, Deb.
Cheryl, thank you for your share. I'd love to just get one more share before we wrap up the call today. You can speak also on this particular question of loneliness and despair, self-pity, where food is your master or where your behavior is your master, or just on a burning desire that you have to share in general.
Hi, this is Kimberly, compulsive eater.
Yes, I was like, I want to hear from an LA lady. Okay, I'm off.
Well, you know, it's a little bit confusing in that, you know, I hear a lot of conversation about God and meditation and stuff, and from what I understand, and yes, I have a lot of years in another program, instead of citing what I think I know, the truth is that this isn't about God. It's about ultimately seeing how self-reliance has failed me. And so I have to be honest with you. You know, I have not changed the way I'm eating. I am doing whatever I'm doing. But what it is being brought to me to do through since I joined this group, Debbie, is to take a look at, you know, what is going on with me and to wake up to self. And so I am not beating myself up with how I eat, you know, what I should and shouldn't be doing, what's right or wrong or any of that, you know, because there's nothing worse than trying to pray to something you don't believe in. And the issue isn't whether I believe in God, it's I don't rely on Him. So I'm taking that whole thing out of the equation, and all I'm trying to do right now is set aside what I think I know and to quit playing God and how I think all this should look like. And I thought the conversation today, Leilani, was fantastic because it really helped me a lot to see how you took every section or paragraph of this book in this and applied your own story to it. So it would help kind of wake me up to ideas of, like, what am I doing? How, you know, waking up to self. So that was incredibly helpful. And I'm clear that I'm absolutely an emotional eater. Like, duh, who isn't? But you know, I relate more to that than I do to binging and stuff. And, Debbie, that's where you've been really helpful in getting me to try to take a look at what is true for me. And that's all I'm looking at right now. What is true for me? As my story might be a little different than others. You know, I'm somebody who did have, you know, I started eating inappropriately or having a weird relationship with food when I was a little kid. I can clearly see that. Drug addiction, cocaine absolutely took over that whole thing. And then when I came into recovery and I quit smoking, bang, gained like 80 pounds in like 3-4 months. And since then, it's been a roller coaster of events. 10 years ago, I had a gastric bypass. Great, got down to an incredibly low weight. And over 10 years, I'm creeping myself back up again. So what's that all about? What is it about me that continues to use food to deal with my life? And I can see that it doesn't work, but, you know, when I take in carbs and stuff, you know, kind of like the lines get blurred, you know, oh, well, another drink in tomorrow. Well, you know, my middle name is tomorrow. So I just found today to be incredibly, incredibly helpful. And the loneliness and stuff, like a lot of people have shared today, has been, you know, really a driving force. And isn't it interesting? The very thing I do, which is eat and use food, makes me even more lonely. It's the wildest thing, and yet I'm caught in this behavior that is beyond my control. And so, Debbie and Leilani and everyone else who shared today, just thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to having a really profound stepful experience. But I am not talking God and meditation in where I'm at. I'm really trying to take a look at what is the truth
of my life in relation to, you know, the questions I need to answer. Do I relate to Bill's story, and how so, and making it so personal? So thank you so much, Debbie, for what you do, and obviously everyone else and the hard work that they've put into this. Thank you.
Kimberly, thank you so much for that share and for bringing us back into it. It's just so perfect to bring us back into that realization that in the first step, we are not in the solution. In the first step, we are only looking at our powerlessness. We are only looking at exactly what happens when there is no God. And so thank you so much for just bringing us back into that. And it's no wonder that we're feeling, you know, like how Leilani was alluding in the beginning, you know, that restless, irritable, and discontent, and a little bit agitated. And yes, because I'm in my first step, and I'm not in my solution yet. I'm just getting really real with the facts about my situation, and I'm just being, the prayer that I have right now is, please just set aside what I think I know and open me up and help me see, help me look at the things that I haven't been looking at, because I've been just deluding myself and liking to kind of live in my story and my version of how I think life should be. So I appreciate that, and thank you everybody who shared today. That was such a rich conversation. It is so amazing when you choose to unmute yourself and share what's on your heart, and just know that you are helping so many people and that we want to hear you. So again, next week we are going to be talking about the hope. We're going to be talking about the second half of Bill's story, which is really about his experience with recovery, with having a spiritual awakening, and we're going to be able to talk about that. So keep your emails coming, keep your questions coming, and thank you again, Leilani. That was just, you just dropped it, sister, and just we're so grateful.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, do you have anything that you would like to say in closing, just after listening to everyone?
Thank you to everyone who shared, and I want to say, yeah, in keeping with that kind of our end note, is that as you continue to go through this, it's a process of discovery, right, of diagnosis, and, you know, if you related to Bill, continue, you're going to glimpse everything, all of the hopelessness and, you know, the self-pity and the loneliness and the despair. Next week will be matched, right, overcome and mirrored by the solution that he experiences. Debbie, thank you so much for your dedication. It's an honor to know you and to see you and to be a part of your community. And, yeah, so everything that you know, you may be experiencing right now, I want you to just dive into the second part of his story and again, like, envision that recovery and restoration in your life, because that's what's possible, and that's actually, like, the only outcome of following this process, right? Line by line, turning statements into questions, generating an experience that is going to set you free. So thank you, everyone. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you. Let's close. You can stay on the line. Let's close with the Serenity Prayer. Leilani, do you want to take us out?
So after a moment of silence for the binger, restrictor, bulimic, anorexic who's still suffering, who keeps us abstinent? So God, grant me the serenity.
Grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change.
I cannot change.
The courage to change the things I can. And the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, everybody. And I will connect with you next week. Signing off. Bye-bye.
Bye.